Jaime, are you there?
Gordon, yes, I am. Yes, sir, I'm here.
All right.
Hi there. This is Kristen with the Alliance.
Hi, Kristen.
Hello, Jaime, and I think I heard Gordon. Hi, Gordon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing so well. How are you?
I'm still eating my lunch, so if you catch me with food in my mouth, if I'm mumbling, you know why. So.
That makes two of us.
So
that,
if I'm mumbling, then you know why.
Well, that makes three of us then, or four of us, because Patrice is eating your lunch too.
No, that actually makes five of us. Hi, guys, this is Sarah.
Hey, Sarah, there you go. Well, it's lunchtime, isn't it?
All in good company. We're breaking bread together, talking about vegetables. This is good stuff. I like it.
Gordon, the only person that I know that is not going to be able to be here today is Paul. He was the only one who indicated he would not be able to attend today's meeting. But you heard some of the discussion this morning at the executive committee meeting.
Yeah, we sure did, yeah. Has anyone, any additional members of the committee joined the call?
Gordon, I haven't seen, I haven't heard anyone else log on just yet.
Okay. All right.
This is Joe Caldwell.
Hey, Joe, there you are.
Everybody that's now on the committee, were they on the call, on our last call a month or so ago, or will this be the first call for anyone?
No, this is everyone. It'll be the same group again.
Okay.
Gordon, there was no one new. The only the last time the only new person was Amore.
Okay.
So we're just waiting for four more folks because I know Paul's not going to be able to join us.
Hey, good afternoon, Jaime. This is Keith.
Hey, Keith.
Hi,
welcome.
How you doing? Thank you.
Fine. Doing great, sir. Thank you. I'm glad you're on the call, and I hope you're doing well, too.
Yes, thank you very much.
Did anyone else join the call? Did someone just join the call?
This is Alan Fellner with Health First.
Hey, Alan. Good afternoon. Jaime Gonzalez here at the Health Plan Alliance. How are you today, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Anyone else join the call? We're just waiting for three more folks, Gordon.
Okay.
Hello, this is Rita Dapko.
Hi, Rita. Good afternoon. It's Jaime.
Hey, Jaime. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Great. Glad you can join us.
Am I the first one on?
No.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt then. I'll put myself on
mute.
No,
you didn't. You're dead. We haven't started, Rita. You're fine.
Okay, good. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Has anyone else joined the call? I thought I heard another beep or something.
Yes, this is Amor with Presbyterian.
Hi, Amor. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Great, thank you.
Great. Thanks for joining the call.
So, Jaime, it looks like the only one we're waiting for is Andy.
Yes, sir. That's right. So you have a quorum with the group that you have here.
I think in the interest of everyone's time, and hopefully Andy will be able to pop on shortly, I'd like to go ahead and start the meeting, Jaime, if you're good with that.
That's fine. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, I appreciate everyone joining the call. We've got Joe and Alan and Rita and Amor, and this is Gordon. Paul was unable to join the call this afternoon. So, and I did hear Keith Guido is with us from Vanguard. And so, Keith, I know we talked with you just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
At probably, at least what I looked, things stayed pretty consistent. So, probably can focus a little bit on your crystal ball here as we look forward. That work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Gordon. That sounds good. I think we have the presentation here, so we'll just quickly go through the presentation and then maybe do a little bit of commentary. But what I did want to do, if we could focus on page 2 for a moment. If you remember, last meeting we made the decision to change our strategic asset allocation from 40% equities to 45% equities. We were there already. As the market drifted, as stocks moved higher, it actually changed our asset allocation for us. And the crossroads we came to, we could either rebalance or we could maintain a higher allocation to stocks, and we chose the latter. And a couple of reasons why, when you look at the investment policy statement, we really have more of a neutral allocation to stocks, 50-50. So this actually brought us closer to that neutral asset allocation. When you came on board initially, it was a little bit, we decided to take a little bit more conservative approach given some of the volatility that we were encountering at that time. So just that was just a little background. So you can see we're 45% equities, 55% fixed income there on page 2. That's broken down as 27% U.S. equities, 18% international or non-U.S. equities. 48% is in U.S. or domestic bonds, and then the remaining 7% is in international or non-U.S. fixed income. And then we have the portfolio construction. I think you've seen this before, but we're a more passively focused portfolio in terms of equities. We have total stock market index, U.S., total international stock index, which is outside of the U.S., that's 27 and 18% respectively. Those are passively managed funds. Then we have 24% in the total bond market, that's U.S. domestic securities, predominantly governments. Then we have international fixed income that goes outside of the U.S., and then we have two corporate-focused bonds, intermediate-term and short-term investment grade. So those would be the funds that make up our portfolio. I think you've seen this before, but the key takeaway is we are now at 45% stocks, and that's reflected in the pie chart on the left. So I'll pause and see if there's any questions on this page here. Okay, so we'll go to page three. And again, this is the heat map, if you will, or the overview of market performance that we've experienced through July. This is, I actually have some updated August figures that I'll share with you for the portfolio. But you can see, as Gordon mentioned, we spoke not too long ago, but you know, when you look at this chart here, it's broken down categorically into U.S. and international stocks and U.S. Fixed income and then international fixed income. And those four sub-asset classes, if you will, make up your portfolio. So how these categories perform are highly correlated with how your portfolio performs. So when you see U.S. equities, I think the S&P 500 is a pretty popular gauge. You focus on there. Mostly large cap stocks. You can see July was a good month for stocks, up over 2% in the U.S., and year to date up almost 11.6%. So it's been a really, really solid year for U.S. equities. I think what we talked about before, we've seen a lot of, in terms of global growth, we've seen this resynchronization of global growth across the major economies, whether it's the U.S., Europe, China, Japan, they're all growing simultaneously. We haven't seen that for quite some time, and that's led to a really good environment for corporate profits, especially here in the U.S. and Europe. So you see that reflected in 12% returns almost year to date. If you look at emerging markets, again, or the international equity component, I think emerging markets continues to be the leader. So maybe that's a surprise to some, where we talked a lot about the policies, potential policies going into the year were to be bad for emerging markets. That actually, they haven't materialized. Emerging markets have done really well year to date, up 25.5%. So that's been a good place. Your portfolio does have exposure to those emerging market stocks, the Brazil, Russia, India, China country sectors. So you have participated in that rally. And then you look at fixed income, the Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Trust, the first line item there. I mean, interest rates are low. I don't think anyone expects any big things out of bonds, but yields have come in, and that's led to modest capital gains for your fixed income component. So you can see year-to-date up 2.7% for U.S. fixed income. And then if we go all the way to the bottom, international fixed income, which is represented in your portfolio, I mean, slightly less, year-to-date up about 0.9%. So, again, the takeaway, I think this is the same thing I said last time we met not too long ago. All four sub-asset classes in your portfolio have had positive performance through July 31st. So I'll pause there, see if there's any questions. Okay, then we'll go to page four. And this is really the portfolio performance rolled up in total. So you can see the value is slightly over $5.6 million. And the net returns, if you look at Health Plan Alliance net, you can see just going across the board here through July 31st, 1 month we're up about 1.3%. For the 3 months, up 2.7%. A year-to-date up 7.16%, and then the year-over-year number is up 6.8% almost. You can see since inception, you did start in July, so this is the one-year number, and then since inception numbers are exactly the same since you've had your one-year anniversary with our advisory services. So all in all, like I said, it's been a pretty good year. Equities are driving the performance of the portfolio higher. And that's reflected in not only your year-to-date number, but the one-year number as well, the year-over-year. So you can see on the bottom here, this is as of July 31st. We didn't quite make the change as of yet, so it does show some differences in the policy. But going forward, that's going to be tightened up with the August-September. There'll be very little deviation because the policy portfolio is more in line with the actual balances or the actual values in the represented asset classes. So any questions on performance? All right, and then we'll go. Okay, great. And then fees, I always keep these in the book here. Again, you've seen the sliding scale. on a $5.6 million portfolio. The value total fee structure, management fees are 32 basis points. The fund expenses, this actually slightly ticked down. I think you were at about 9 basis points when you started. So when we do find opportunities to lower fees, we certainly do that. And slowly but surely, you may see that reflected in your balances or your total fee structure. So all-in cost of 40 basis points there. So that's where we're at. Rather a competitive offer, we think, from a value proposition. So, but if we go to page 6, I just wanted to include a little bit of commentary here. I think if you listen to the financial news or the financial pundits, you hear a lot of talk about stocks being overvalued. So you look at something like the S&P 500, a common gauge is the PE ratio, the price to earnings ratio. But I think what we're showing here is that, stocks historically, you can see the average PE ratio is 16 over the last 20 years. This chart here shows it's trending at about 17.5. So, a lot of talk about, well, stocks are overvalued versus their historic averages. And I think the key takeaway here is that, just because stocks are overvalued doesn't mean that that's a trigger to sell out or that we should use this as a metric to try and time the market. What you can see here is that stocks have been consistently over that 16 dotted line, if you will, over the last 3 years. We had a blip in 2015 and another blip going into 2016. But the takeaway is stocks have been over 16 times earnings for the last couple of few years. And so not using this as a metric to time the market, but the takeaway here is that forward-looking returns are probably going to be lower than what we've experienced from equities over the last several years. So if we've had 10 to 15% returns out of the crisis for your equity portfolio, I mean, we're thinking, though, going forward, something like 6 to 7% for a global equity portfolio is going to be more appropriate over the next 5, 7, 10 years. So that is our outlook for stocks, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that although based on this measure, appear to be overvalued, we don't think they're grossly overvalued in an environment where we have low interest rates, low inflation. So as opposed to some other investment shops are calling for lower returns, closer to 2, 3, even some zero for stocks over the next 10 years. We think it's going to be still positive, but not as robust as you've experienced in the past. So 10% is going to look something more like 6, I guess, is a takeaway here. So, any questions on market valuations or forward-looking analysis on our return projections?
You know, Keith, if you took and did that study over 15 years as opposed to the 20 years that's mm-hmm. there, you would probably have a much lower average, right?
Yes, you probably would have a much lower average if you just looked at, I would say, the 10-year, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 so you're probably closer to taking out all those high years, 98 to 02. Your average is probably closer to 12 or 13, maybe, somewhere in that range. You'd still say don't worry about that from your perspective.
No, that's a good point. I mean, if those numbers roll off the tape, so to speak, and you're looking at a more compressed average, you would see that average come down, all else being equal. But I would say that's played into our outlook, Gordon, on the fact that returns aren't going to be we're not going to see average returns of about 10%. That's incorporated into our lower return objectives of 6 to 7 for stocks. So we do take that into account, though, yes, when forecasting forward.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. I think if we go to page 7, one of the things I did want to bring, I mean, this is kind of a paradox. I feel like we have all sorts of uncertainty, whether it be politics, geopolitical with the tensions in North Korea, whether it be with the Federal Reserve and how they're going to normalize policy, which we saw them make a move yesterday. But as we have all this uncertainty, market volatility is close to historic lows. So, I mean, if it's been a Goldilocks environment for investors, I mean, this is it. I mean, you're having a full year of returns for your equity portfolio with bond-like volatility. You don't see that quite often. So I think our takeaway is as we move into year-end, we do think there is going to be maybe a pickup in volatility. Not to say that the bull market is coming to an end, but more in things will be getting back more, I guess, back to use what we're used to seeing, which is a little bit more volatility. I think we've only had a couple days of 1% or 2% downturns this year, which is way below what we're used to seeing from day-to-day market volatility. And I think as we move towards the end of the year, we still have the debt ceiling to deal with that was kicked down the road. Maybe some uncertainty around potential policy, which we'll talk about on the next page. But it wouldn't surprise us if this gauge on the bottom here, which is called the VIX, commonly referred to as the fear index, if you will, which is a gauge of investor sentiment, if that were to tick higher. You can see, obviously, where it moves during periods of market stress, and we're at about one-fifth of the top there right now. So it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a little bit puzzling, but, you know, the economy is certainly growing globally. Corporate profits look firm. That gives investors a lot of confidence, but we just haven't had a lot of volatility this year, and that's kind of uncharacteristic for a stock market. So it wouldn't surprise us going forward that this ticks up a bit. So any questions there? And I think if we just go to page 8, this is the last slide. I think obviously there's a lot about policy, right? That was a big thing coming into 2017. We have a new administration, and there was obviously on the campaign trail, there's a lot of talk about how can we improve the U.S. Economy. And I think the current administration talked a lot about the first well, all of them, so to speak, but I think when you look at the first three, our view is meaningful policy, and I think that's a key when you're talking about implementing fiscal policy such as tax reform, infrastructure, and deregulation. If it's meaningful, it can have a positive effect on the economy, and you'll see from our perspective, if we were to get positive tax reform at the corporate and or individual level, I mean, we could see growth move higher, but I mean, that would lead to probably a little bit more inflation and a stronger dollar. And the green means while those things would happen, we would have higher interest rates, higher inflation, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for the economy. It would actually be a positive, and that could actually lead to an extension of the positive market environment we've seen. Because if you remember, we're going on about 8 years of this bull market now. So, I mean, it's quite extended in terms of the average length is usually 3 to 4. So, I mean, this is twice the length. And if we were to see infrastructure, for example, I mean, if we were to see pointed infrastructure spending in the right places, again, another environment where it would be positive for the economy and probably positive for stocks. And some sort of deregulation, whether it means making allowing businesses to, make it easier to do business, or whether it be in the banking sector, I think that would be positive for the U.S. as well. So I think the talk about trade policy and immigration, that tends to be a negative. And, you know, that could offset potentially any sort of positive from tax reform or infrastructure. If we were to move more inward and away from global trade, we think that would have a longer-term negative effect on the economy, as well as it would be inflationary, which would have a negative effect on the economy. And then with immigration, that could hit us potentially at the labor market. We're already somewhat tight, and if immigration were to slow down, you know, there could be a shortage of workers for some of these jobs, which would put an increase on wages, and that's where you would see inflation go up, but growth stagnate. So that's a little bit on the policy front. I think from our perspective, in theory, it sounds good. The actual implementation, though, is probably going to be a little bit, it's going to be drawn out. We don't expect anything this year and maybe not next year. If everyone can't get on the same page. So I'll just pause there and see if there's any questions on the policy front.
Do you want any questions for Keith? I saw also just ask, everybody okay with where we're at on the policy, the decisions we made? Anybody feeling a need to revisit that or okay moving ahead at this point?
Feeling good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Keith,
don't hear any other questions. Appreciate your time. And your thoughtful analysis there of where we think things are headed. And you say it in a calm voice. I don't know that the market's that calm sometimes, you're, as calm as your slide would seem to indicate. But
right.
Yeah, I appreciate your input, and thanks for sharing that with us.
No, absolutely. And if there's any other follow-up questions, certainly feel free to funnel those through Jaime. But otherwise, I appreciate your time today, and we will certainly be in touch for the next meeting. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Keith.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
All right. Jaime, do you want to take us through the August update?
Yes, sir. Sure will. There are no significant changes, if you will, in the financial reports that I previously presented to you about 5 weeks ago. So I'd like to see if there's any questions about the financial reports, because there's really nothing significant to report. I mean, this is just 1 month later, basically. Does anyone have any questions about any of the reports? So, Gordon, this is one that we do have to vote for.
Okay, so we want we just need to accept the reports as presented, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I would ask if there is a motion to accept the August 2017 financial statements as presented.
Motion. Joe Caldwell.
Is that Joe? Was that Joe? Okay.
A second?
Second, this is Rita.
All right, okay. Thanks, Rita. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right, motion carried. So you have your approval there, Jaime.
Great, thank you. Moving on to the next item. Excuse me, Gordon, before we continue, were you able to join us? Okay, just wanted to make sure he was the only one that we hadn't heard if he was here or not. Gordon, sorry. Going on to the third quarter goals update, again, not too much significant change, if you will, and this committee has responsibility for the finance and business development goals of our overall goals. The only one that we're anticipating but we're not quite there yet is the sponsorship revenue goal. We're below threshold. Right now, actually, that says 545. I actually sold a few more things before then. We're at 551,500. Our goal is to at least try to get to a threshold of 600,000. And I'm still working on that. So we have a couple more months of some opportunities through vendor spotlights and maybe a couple other ideas that we have to procure a little bit more sponsorship dollars. If we come in at it, we'll be really close, but may not be right at it. But my goal is to try to get there, and we're trying. As far as the other two, overall product revenue, right now we're projecting that we'll hit Superior and budget management as well. Any questions about the goals? Okay.
Oh, I think you can keep going there, Jaime.
Okay, so the next one is our 2018 proposed budget. And you'll see the budget in front of you. Next year is what we're going to call a bridge year. So there's going to be some transition going on with Kathy leaving the organization and a new CEO coming in possibly, or if it's an internally if that occurs. In addition to possibly bringing on one or two more employees, FTEs, to the team. The other thing to consider in looking at, I put some footnotes down at the bottom of the budget for your convenience. It says that there's only four plans that are leaving. It's actually five. We just learned recently of Fidelis Care. So in addition to Baptist Care Connect, Parkland, and PPIC, Fidelis Care. And that new total in terms of the revenue that those five plans is $237,000. So there, It's factored into the number that you see up there on what we're projecting for annual fees for 2018. But that is a significant drop, if you will, in fees. The other significant has to do with the salaries, and that has to do with the fact that for part of next year, if we have a new CEO and then Kathy is on for the with her the time that she's here as well as her PTO, it's approximately 5 months. So we have two CEOs with relatively the same salary for that period of time, plus a new director and plus an admin assistant. So there is another significant expense right there. Those are the primary two drivers. Understanding that that period that Kathy's here, that's a one-time cost that would be only for that period that she's here. Another item that is not as significant is that we do have an audit next year. So that's also a one-time cost of $26,000. So there are a few one-time costs that we're projecting at this time a net operating loss of Kathy just reminded me, there's one other piece here in office expense is that we have the relocation. If there is a relocation of a new CEO to the organization, there is a relocation fee of about $75,000. So that's also factored into this, and it comes out under office expense. So we have all of those one-time costs to consider. What we're projecting based on that is a net operating loss of approximately $95,000, but a net profit overall of about $6,000. So just, again, this, Gordon, I didn't put on here, but this is a vote required. But let me open it up for discussion, and Kathy, if you wanted to add anything else.
And let me make just a couple comments, too. We discussed this a little bit at the executive committee, which met earlier today. There was a little bit of discussion about what a negative budget means from that perspective. I think from my standpoint, if it wasn't for the one-time expenses, you'd be very close to what we had as the 2017 budget amount of the $175,000 that's shown on that schedule. And so knowing that we're in a transition year, we have these different activities going on, I think it, for the most part, everyone was comfortable for this, especially you just saw our reserves were over $5 million in equity within the alliance that there was a general comfort there. But felt we needed to be clear because certainly everybody is cost conscious in our industry today, and our owners will require us to do the same within the association. So that was kind of the nature of that discussion, and Kathy and Jaime and others can add to that as well.
Yeah, the non-reoccurring expenses are about $250,000, and then we have two positions that we're currently recruiting for that we haven't filled yet, and that's a little less than that, but those are the two sort of buckets, and so there was some discussion about timing on hiring or whether we just view this as a bridge year and know that's there. The other thing that we also discussed is the ability to probably increase revenue easier than we can decrease other categories of expenses because the meetings are a core component of what we do, and the consulting budget, you see that went down. That's because the search firm was built in for this year. It's not for next. But there's our infrastructure we continue to enhance, and that's a big chunk of what's there as well. So, it's just a matter of how we wanted to approach the year and where we took that.
Are there any questions from anyone about the budget?
Kathy, this is Alan Sellner with Health First. This is my, my second meeting, so I'm new to this with the Health Plan Alliance. We've outperformed our original budget for 17, it looks like, in a pretty decent way. Do we tend to be very conservative in our budgeting? So we're forecasting a big...
Yeah. So what happens when we build our budget is that we build in for fees exactly which organizations we know that are going to be in that pool and going forward. So we don't build in for any new plants coming in that we don't already have confirmed that are coming. What we don't know during a year is plants that are going to go out of business, be sold or dropped. Like we just heard about Fidelis being sold to Centene, so we took that out of the budget. It's kind of unusual to have that many plans in a given year. Usually we lose one or two, but to lose four or five in a year is quite significant. So that's one piece. Reinsurance, we asked for best guess from our reinsurance partners going into the budgeting that goes past the board in the fall. Then we reforecast that when the executive committee gets together and report that out in the March-April timeframe, because, as you know, reinsurance all gets renewed at the beginning of the year. So that could go up. It could go down. This year it went up. The year before that it went down. So if you look at 15 actual to 16, you see about a $200,000 or $150,000 drop. So we budgeted for that drop in 17, and then it went up a couple thousand dollars or a couple hundred thousand dollars. So, you know, it that varies from year to year, and so we do the best we can in budgeting. Sometimes, you know, to our benefit this year, that went up. And then sponsorships, that one is pretty close to what we do. The other product revenue, again, we budget best we know, but that will vary from year to year, sometimes higher, sometimes lower, and we're hoping to add some additional contracts in the GPO to add to that. And then we're probably closer often on expenses just because those are more predictable to us than some of those categories in the revenue line.
So I guess the bottom line question I'm asking is do we tend to outperform our budget more than we underperform our budget?
Usually.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I would say 16 was the one that we weren't sure we were going to because we lost about $250,000 in reinsurance revenue. But I think we just kind of squeaked by and making it in some other areas and adding new members. So, yeah, typically we budget conservatively and usually do better than that. But that's not a guarantee.
Understood. Thank you.
Kathy, this is Amor with Presbyterian. I'm also, this is my second meeting, I believe, so also very new. But you said how many groups you historically lose, one to two. How many do we sell or gain each year on average?
That varies also. I would say we've over the last couple of years, we've had more. I think last year we added four and we lost four. This year we've added four and we've identified five, but one of those, Fidelis, isn't going to go out of business till next year probably. We haven't had that discussion with him yet. In prior years, it may be adding one or two, you know, maybe not losing anybody. It depends on the market and what's going on. So we had a period early on in the organization where we were adding members, and then around 2003, we had 16 members and five were for sale, and four of those ended up selling. Then we added several members in the next 3 years, and then after ACA, we saw a period of about 3 or 4 years where plans were being added, but we really weren't losing anybody. And I think it's mostly because the owners felt like they had a strategic asset. And then when the losses with exchanges started catching up with people, we're now seeing some businesses exiting out of that business. And in fact, you know, some of those are effective in closing. And then I think with the sale of Fidelis to Centene, we go through different cycles with the publicly traded, trying to acquire market share by buying plans. And that seems to be ramping up right now as well. But I would say the average of adding anywhere from probably two to four, and in a given year we look at losing maybe one or two, and last year was probably more than most.
Yeah. Yeah. Amar, if you take a look at the bottom below the financial statement there, you'll see in 2014 we had 47 members, 49 in 15. So it's remained pretty stable. We've been able to replace the losses that we've had.
And also, more, what that did is it prompted the executive committee to suggest that we break up the goal around membership into two parts. So we now have a retention of current members, and it only counts against us if somebody voluntarily drops out. So this year, Parkland, which is still in business but having some financial difficulties with Medicaid, dropped out, and that's considered a voluntary withdrawal. If somebody is closing or being sold, we don't count that. And then we have a recruitment or growth goal of adding new members, and that is a separate one, that where we used to use a goal that netted them both out together.
Okay. Yeah, that helps me because I can see it staying about the same, but when we talk about budget and being conservative and budgeting the losses, I didn't know if we what the average gains were and if we had budgeted the gains as well. But it's only
and some of the plans that we've added are smaller. There's a couple of startup plans or they're at the $10,000 to $20,000 range, but we've lost a couple of bigger plans that are paying $50,000 a year. So adding one and losing one are not always equal.
Okay.
All right. All good questions. Any other questions on the budget? So, Jaime, we need to probably take a vote to say we would recommend this to the board?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. That's correct.
So would there be a motion to recommend this 2018 budget as presented to the board at the meeting next week? Someone willing to make the motion?
This is Rita. I move to approve the or suggest the 2018 proposed budget as is.
Thanks, Rita. Is there a second?
Second. This is Alan.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of recommending this budget to the board, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same aye. Sign. All right. So we've got a budget to bring to the board. Thank you, everyone. Jaime, you want to move on to the next topic?
Yes, sir. So the next is our 2018 draft goals. Again, the committee has responsibility for the finance and business development goals. You'll see that we added a new goal and we consolidated two of the previous goals into the budget management. So previously we had one for product revenue and we also had one for sponsorship. But what we did this year is that we consolidated those into budget management since they can be tracked through that, and we're diversifying this by adding the GPO participation goal. This is a new goal for the Alliance in terms of what we're going to be doing next year with the GPO. Our goal is then to diversify the portfolio and then also to increase the participation and the penetration of our members participating in these contracts. Currently, from our engagement tracking, we're able to determine that our members are participating, roughly speaking, in about six GPO revenue-generating contracts. Of our membership. So the goal here is then to diversify the portfolio, attract more GPO participating companies that are generating revenue for the Alliance, and then expand the opportunity for our members to be able to participate in those. And some of the activities that will be involved, I'll report on those in just a minute when I talk about the GPO pipeline. But that's the focus of that new goal. Dennis or Kathy, did you have anything you wanted to add, Dennis?
I mean, the one thing that I would add is that this new goal is built upon a specific strategy that we have added in our 2017-2018 strategic plan, which is precisely as Jaime outlined, is designed to both increase the engagement with vendors on a strategic level, to work with members to identify your priorities and which vendors and business partners would bring most value to you, and to work with those partners to increase participation in those contracts and bring added value to our members. So this particular goal is reflected in our strategic plan and tied directly to it.
The other thing is, as the organization has evolved over the years, we wanted to look for additional sources of revenue beside membership fees. And when we added in the business development position, it was to focus more time and attention on looking for those sources. The sponsorship program is bringing in about $600,000 a year. The GPO is bringing in more than that, but we thought that the expansion opportunities were around additional contracts in that. Overall, in our budget, fees now account for about 55% of the budget, and the other revenue, sponsorships, and GPO accounts for about 45%, and that's up from probably 5, 6, 7 years ago when it was about 75-25. So, there's an upside opportunity for growing revenue without depending on membership fees to do that.
Are there any questions about the goals?
Okay. So that slate of goals are being presented to the board next week as well, right, Jaime?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, and again, those were discussed with the executive committee earlier today as well. So so those will be moved forward by that committee, I believe.
That's right.
All right. What's next for us, Jaime?
So we have the governance policy, the capital contributions and distribution. It's a report that's – it's an oral report given by Dennis.
I'm actually going to cover two items under this. Neither one requires a vote of or endorsement by this committee. We're sharing it with you for information purposes. There will be follow-up on these items after the board meeting, so we're just wanting you to be aware of them at this point. We have two related activities occurring. One is the combination of Gunderson Health Plan with Unity Health Plan, both plans in Wisconsin, joined earlier this year and formed Quartz Health Solutions. They are merging, have merged their operations, are in the process of merging, you know, their market positioning strategies and their product strategies. All of their employees are now employed by Quartz. So this is a situation where a shareholder is merging into another organization that is eligible to be a member of the alliance. Quartz meets all of our eligibility requirements. And this kind of a situation is anticipated and covered in our LLC agreement. And we have precedent for it happening throughout the history of the alliance. It's happened several times before. So our legal counsel is just encouraging, making sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed and that there's adequate and appropriate documentation of this transfer of ownership share from Gunderson to Quartz fulfills all the requirements of our LLC agreement. So it's pretty straightforward. It does require a majority vote. And I'll explain in just a minute why we're holding that off until after the board meeting and why we will do that electronically. Because it relates to any questions about that pretty straightforward.
Hey, Dennis.
Transaction, uh-huh.
Anything with the change, do you feel Quartz will willingly continue their health plan alliance association?
Yes, thanks. That's a great question. We have met with their senior leadership team on site. Kathy even this week had engagement with the CEO. And then you have the carryover of the senior leadership team from Gunderson remains in place working with Quartz. And so that gives us a great foundation. And as I said, we've met all of the new people and engaged with them. So yes, we're quite confident and comfortable that they will continue their membership.
Good
question. Any other questions? Well, then the second aspect of this, then, is the merger of Physicians Plus, which is an original founding member of the alliance, into Quartz. Again, Physicians Plus is a Wisconsin plan, so we now have three Wisconsin plans coming together to form Quartz. This is a situation that is a little unique in that we have two shareholders, Quartz, which now has the share from Gunderson, and PPIC joining together. This situation is not fully anticipated in our LLC agreement. The LLC agreement, as it is worded now, redeems the value of a share when a member closes or is sold or merges or voluntarily withdraws from the alliance. It redeems their share for $1. Our philosophy is that in this situation, because we have two shareholders merging, that it is equitable to redeem Physician Plus's share for their original capital contribution, which would be $50,000. Because this is outside and not anticipated or covered by the LLC agreement, due to Delaware law, which we're incorporated in, we are incorporated in Delaware, will require a unanimous approval by the shareholders. So in order to get that unanimous approval, we'll have to do an electronic vote because we don't typically have unanimous participation in our board meetings. So it won't be able to, the vote won't be able to occur during a board meeting. We'll have to do it electronically afterward. And again, because it's not anticipated, we're being very careful in terms of the language of the resolution. And we're just wanting to make sure that with Quartz and PPIC that we fully understand their relationship and the structure that they're putting together. And so we're in conversation, our legal team is in conversation with their senior leadership team to make sure that we understand all of that cleanly and again can document it. So, so you know, any comment that you have about that, again, it isn't anticipated in the LLC agreement, but we feel like it is an equitable approach to redeem PPIC's full capital contribution. The way their distributions would work in the future is that the distributions that will be given to them next year based on 2017 financial results, both PPIC and Quartz will qualify, and so Quartz would receive both of those distributions. For the product side of things, they'll have only one share after this resolution, so they would receive one shareholder distribution, but receive the product distribution for both organizations. And then obviously moving on into 2019, since there's only one organization that remains, they'll receive a single distribution. Any comments or thoughts or reactions to that, particularly, you know, the idea of the equitable element of this?
Nope. Sounds fair, and obviously it'll take quite a bit of work to get everybody's sign off. So good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever had a 100% participation, Gordon, on
yeah.
anything. So we'll have to work on that.
Okay, Jaime, you need to finish up here with the sponsorship program.
Yes, sir. So in your packet, I included just the grid of the sponsorship tracking just for your reference and for your review. There's really not much to say about it other than that it's, you know, what I had earlier said, it was just a little bit higher. The packet, it says 545,500, but since that time, I've actually increased it by selling some sponsorships. But I do want to focus more on the preferred business sponsor this year and then more put a little bit more emphasis on 2018. The program, as I've previously reported, this is the first year, the inaugural year of the Preferred Business Sponsor Program, which, by the way, was very well received by our business partners. We have a total of 16 preferred business sponsors participating in the program. In general, what the program allows these sponsors to do is to combine those for those that are participating in the GPO, their GPO dollars along with their sponsorship dollars to achieve any one of these four levels. We have the platinum, the gold, the silver, and the bronze, and they have different benefits based on their investment at each one of these levels. Again, these 16 organizations have been, you know, they played a key role in the alliance, not only in terms of helping us to generate revenue, but they're also supporting and participating as faculty and thought leaders in our educational programming that we offer to you, our members. So overall, the program is working very well, as we anticipated, and for this reason, we're going to continue the program into 2018. There won't be that many changes to the program. In fact, we're going to actually enrich the program just a little bit with some other sponsorship opportunities for these vendors to participate. In 2018, we're looking at some of the benefits might change just slightly based on feedback that I received from the sponsors participating in the program. And we're also looking at ways that we can continue to highlight and leverage those that are participating in the GPO, who are both participating in our sponsorship program as well as the GPO. So you'll see more. You may already notice that in some of the emails that you receive from our eDigest, we're highlighting different ones of these preferred business sponsors who are also participating in the GPO, giving you more information about them and what they're doing and the products and services that they're offering. But again, overall, the program in 17 will continue, will be a little bit more enhanced, enriched, and overall, the vendors are really liking it. So are there any questions about this year and next year's programs? Okay. Kathy? I'm sorry. No. Sorry, excuse me. I think I'm sorry for making the noise in the background here. I'm turning my pages. I apologize. Looking now, going on, Gordon, is that okay if I continue?
Yeah, you know, go right ahead.
Yes, sir. So looking now at our GPO program this year and going forward into next year, in the packet what I include is an overall of the GPO participating companies and then two dashboards that I use to track the activity that I'm engaging with each of these particular companies. We have a total of 14 currently participating in the program. Seven of those are actually revenue generating and seven are non-revenue generating. The only difference is that one group does not, the non-revenue doesn't pay a fee to the Alliance. However, they provide direct discounts to our members and other value-added services. So we're at 14 and seven in each group, in each category. As we mentioned earlier, the goal for next year is to diversify this portfolio. And my goal is to increase the number of GPO contracts that are revenue generating in the Alliance, and also that hopefully that will help with some of that offset of the loss of fees and increase our revenue in that part of the portfolio. One of the things that I'm doing currently, I'm working with my colleague Nicole, who's our marketing communications director, again highlighting these different organizations that are participating currently, but then also looking at ways that we can diversify this portfolio by attracting new GPO participating organizations. One of the things, and you'll see this in the dashboard, I'm looking at three organizations that hopefully I will be able to close but either by the end of this year or the beginning of next year, and that's the FIA Group, the Most Group, and Bloom, who have all expressed a genuine interest in wanting. I have proposal of wanting to be part of the GPO. I have two proposals from two of the organizations, the Most Group and the FIA Group, and I'm working with Bloom on putting together their proposal. But basically, the process is that I bring the proposal both to this committee and the Programs and Partnership Committee for review and approval, and then we actually, after we get the approval from you guys and the SLT here, we will proceed with contracting these organizations. In 2018, the focus is going to be a lot on growing the GPO and bringing that, diversifying that portfolio. One of the things as I'm looking at is looking to you as our members, are there organizations that you would like me to include or to pursue and to vet and determine that they would be good fit for our program? As you can see, as Kathy mentioned, the sponsorship and the GPO combined represent about 45% of the revenue that the Alliance generates. And through both of these programs, both the preferred sponsored program and the GPO, there's an opportunity for us to increase that percentage slightly through diversifying our GPO program. So I'll stop there, Gordon, and find out if you have any questions or any of the other committee members have any questions or comments or reaction.
No, none from me. I'm comfortable with where it's headed. So anyone else have any questions on the GPO program? All right.
So, yeah, just one other comment. Because we're moving into more in-depth collaboratives on various different topics, we'll probably use that opportunity with those advisory groups to either recommend or vet some of the products that would relate to that particular area. And there's about maybe 8 to 10 of those collaborative areas that we're focusing in on, so that'll be a little bit more targeted as to how we get suggestions as well.
All right, Gordon, so that's all I have to report on the GPO program.
Okay. So it looks like you have the dates included in the packet for next year's committee meetings, which I know you folks will do a good job of getting those out to us in advance and on our calendars and so forth. Hoping some or all of the committee can make it to Asheville next week. That'd be a good chance for everyone to get together, especially as we have new folks on the committee. If any of you are there, hopefully we can at least get together, say hello, and be able to share our stories as we work through that here with the association. So, any other items for the committee to consider?
There's none on our part. I'm on part of the staff.
Okay. Board. Any board member or any committee members with any questions? Hearing none, I appreciate everyone's participation, and we will talk again soon, I'm sure. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Great job.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.